The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255. 458 Talk. What's on your mind about firearms today? And as usual, it's another great day in Fairbanks. The wind was pretty fierce this morning. Temperatures minus 6, and I've been shoveling snow. And here at the broadcasting station, Melissa is yet again expertly running the board. And Melissa spent a lot of time getting the archives up to date for us, so I want her to know that I very much appreciate that. What is on our agenda today? Our holiday today is National Debunking Day. Can you believe we have such a holiday? That's handy for us on Shooter's Corner. We firearms people are always doing a lot of debunking. It's also National Worship of Tools Day, but we worship, so to speak, our firearms every day, so we won't spend any time on that. For history, let's talk about the Lend-Lease Act signed this day in 1941. And if we have time, we'll talk about Colonel James B. Moorhead. He passed away this day in 2012. His book, In My Sights, The Memoir of a P-40 Ace, is his life story. And he applied his skills as a big game hunter to his accomplishments as a World War II flying ace. If we don't have time today, I will talk about him in the next week or two. And we have two smartest person in the room words woven into our discussion, debunk and oxoricide. So for our main topic, we will finish our discussion from Guy Smith's Guns and Control book. We'll wrap it up today. It'll be our third and final discussion on gun availability and its relationship to crime. Now, today, March 11th of every year, is National Debunking Day. All those exaggerations, the fake news, the false claims, myths about firearms, opinion articles in newspapers, today we can take control again. We can do some debunking. We can find a little more truth in the universe of firearms. First, what does debunking mean and where did it come from? Debunking means to expose false or nonsensical claims or sentiments. But I had no idea how that word originated. I found that it is a relatively new word, originating in 1923. A United States novelist, William Woodward, who lived from 1874 to 1950, first used the word in his best-selling book titled Bunk. Bunk is a 370-page fantasy about a mystical character named Michael Webb. He's a debunking expert. And his adventures with businessmen, vampires, literary people, literary characters, motion picture stars, and treasure seekers. And he used the word to mean take the bunk out of things. And after Woodward used that word in his book, it was used by author Harold Faulkner in his article Colonial History Debunked, and that was published in Harper's Magazine in December of 1925. And that article was, what I read, quickly debunked. And the word was then in vogue in America from the mid-20s on. So that's where that came from. Now, last week, I mentioned an opinion piece in the Daily News Miner titled A Visionary Path to Responsible Gun Ownership. And I had a strong opinion. One of our listeners, Ron, called in with his opinion, which I concur with. And that News Miner opinion letter needed a lot of debunking last week and a little more this week, too. One item I had a problem with and mentioned it to you last week was the writer's citing of the CDC Wonder database, the five-year average 2015 to 2019 for ages 0 to 19 years old for firearms accidents. The CDC is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and Wonder stands for Wide-Ranging Online Data for Epidemiologic Research. Now, there's another database which the author did not cite, but would have had to use if she actually ran the numbers herself to find statistics on fatal injury and violence data, which that's the WISE CARS database. WISE CARS stands for Web-Based Injury Statistics Query and Reporting System, and that's also part of the CDC statistics. Now, we learned from the statistician Guy Smith that we've been talking about that we cannot combine together firearms deaths or injuries for youth in the age group of 0 to 19 to make any sort of accurate statement. Now, firearms and deaths for small children ages 0 to 5 or 6 most often happen in the home, and we know what that problem is. Either the guns were not locked up or an adult wanted to harm a child and reported it as an accident. But once the age reaches about 14 or 15 years old through 19, we can no longer make an all-inclusive assumption that the accidents or deaths caused by guns are caused by the same situations and issues for the very young children. By about 15 years old, and mostly in the large metropolitan centers, we have to look at that age group within its socioeconomic reality, and that's gang membership. And I would not have brought this opinion article up again today if it weren't for that. When I got home last Thursday after the program, I saw an article in Fox News titled, "Chicago Teen Murdered by Latin King Gang Members Over Haircut." That is exactly the reality of what we talked about last week. A young person in a gang shot or being shot at by other young persons in a gang, all for frivolous reasons. The scene here was two Latin King gang members, one 21 and the other 20 years old, shot and killed a 16-year-old who was a member of a rival gang called the 2-6. And the reason? The 16-year-old was giving a friend a 2-6 style haircut, and the rival gang members didn't like that, so they shot him. Now, my question to you and to the person who wrote that Newsminer opinion piece last week, where do you think that statistic ends up in the CDC database? It ends up under youth 0 to 19, of course. What was this death by firearm related to? Is it because there are too many guns available to law-abiding citizens and this particular gun was not locked up? Of course not. But that is what people with an agenda would have you believe when a youth is involved. It's a gang issue. And in a very few minutes, we're going to recap what we talked about last week, where gang member guns come from, and why making it harder for law-abiding citizens to buy guns or limit our ownership of guns and ammunition would likely not have made any difference at all in this young man's killing. In fact, statistics show the more restrictions that are put on legal acquisition of guns only drives illegal acquisition and use further into the underground market. So stay with us and we'll talk about that. Let's see, I have, what, about a minute here? Okay, before we go to break, let me just tell you that Glenn Miller's reloading classes, there's one this weekend, and what happened was one gentleman in the class had to change dates, and so he will not be coming. That means there's one extra seat available. If you would like to take that seat, this is a Friday and Saturday class, call Glenn at 907-347-1396. That's 907-347-1396. If you go to the AIMCOM website, it will show that that class is closed, but there's not. There's one open. And I want to tell you that to put on these classes, you can only put them onto a very small group of persons. And so if even one person drops out, that class doesn't even pay for itself. Glenn really isn't making any money doing this, but I don't want to see him go into the red doing it. So if you are thinking about this class and could take it this weekend, give Glenn a call. And we're going to go to commercial break.
Extend the line. life of your car or truck, keep it in top shape with Rogers Auto Repair. Rogers is a complete auto shop. They do it all. Tune-ups to winterizing. Even engine and transmission rebuilds right on the premises. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. They've been helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Call family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair and be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair. Getting out to play in Alaska is a year-round activity. So before you leave home, make sure your trailer is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to wiring and lights. Have it serviced at Arctic RV. Motorhomes, toy haulers, campers, bodywork to appliances. See their huge selection of RV parts as well. Alaska plays rough. Make sure you and your RV are ready for it with Arctic RV. Book your appointment now. Rough it in style. Arctic RV. Open all winter long at 30th and Pegger.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with daytime highs approaching 10. Winds out of the west 8 to 15 miles per hour. Will dip down to about 17 below. Tonight, cloudy skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 3 below. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 5 degrees below zero.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Alignments protect your vehicle's steering system as it extends the life of your tires. Book yours at GCR Tires and Service, the Tire Guys, taming the Alaskan Road, Van Horn at Cushman.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255, 458-TALK, and tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. And we have a caller. You are on the line.
Hey, Laura, this is Dennis here.
Hi, Dennis. Finally, you called.
Yeah, I thought I'd surprise you and give you a call, but my wife and I were listening this morning. We listen to you every week.
Oh, thank you.
And you're doing a fine job.
Thank you, Dennis.
We're just loving it. We call Thursday Laura Day.
Oh.
So one thing I wanted to say about comments and commentaries when you read them or hear them, whenever they say this is reasonable or this is common sense legislation, what they are saying then is your God-given right to defend yourself is unreasonable.
Yes.
So I look for those sort of words. This is reasonable. This is common sense. When it's really not. If there's such a word as uncommon sense,
yes.
That's what I call
yes.
it, uncommon sense.
I agree, Dennis.
So I will let you go.
Thank you so much, and say hello to Marilyn for
me. Okay, I will.
Okay, bye. Thank you for the call.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye. And listeners, I want to let you all know, when I first got into this and when I first started teaching, Dennis and another gentleman, Wes Norville, helped me immensely. I wouldn't know what I, and Joe Nava, the three of them, I wouldn't know what I know today. I wouldn't be here talking to you if it wasn't for them. Dennis and Wes helped me teach my class. Afterwards, we would have these just amazing discussions about what I did wrong during class and how this isn't right and you need to change this. And sometimes I go home almost in tears, but you know, they were right all of the time and they made me a better instructor. So Dennis, thank you very much. You've really done a lot for me over the years. I appreciate that. Okay, so I'll move on to the Lend-Lease Act. And I would be remiss if we didn't talk about this today. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed a document titled An Act to Promote the Defense of the United States, this day in history, March 11, 1941. And Lend-Lease was a program under which we could supply Britain, France, the Republic of China, and later the Soviet Union and other allied nations with food, oil, and other materials, including warships, warplanes, and weapons. The Lend-Lease term lasted from March 11, 1941 to September 1945. The concept was that our aid was cash-free. We were not looking for cash back. We were not selling goods and services. In return, the United States was to be given leases on Army and Naval bases in Allied territory during World War II. Now, our country shipped a total of $50.1 billion, which would be close to about $726 billion today. I read that $50.1 billion amounted to 17% of our country's entire war expenditure during World War II. Of that $50.1 billion, approximately $34 billion went to the United Kingdom, $11 billion went to the Soviet Union, $3 billion to France, and $1.6 billion to China. About $2.6 billion was given to other allies. And in reverse, what the United States received in value from our allies was services by way of rent on air bases. The total amount was $7.8 billion, with $6.8 billion of that coming from Britain and the Commonwealth. That was the rent on the air bases. So for equipment we loaned, the agreement terms were that it was to be used until returned or destroyed. In reality, very little equipment was ever returned. That is a very overgeneral summary of Lend-Lease, because I want to go in a different direction with this. The effect of the Lend-Lease was to get around our pretense of the United States remaining neutral during World War II. Our government passed a series of neutrality acts to counter our involvement in the growing threats and wars leading to World War II. And after World War I, the United States adopted the politics of isolationism and non-intervention. We did not want to become entangled in foreign conflicts again. We had just experienced the Great Depression in the early 1930s and a recession in the late 1930s. And there was sentiment in our country that blamed our industries and our banks for using our resources to fund World War I. And of course, during World War II, after Germany began attacking our ships and the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, our sentiment changed. However, early in World War II, President Roosevelt wanted the flexibility to help nations fend off the Axis powers, Germany, Italy, and Japan. And Congress was not interested at first. But when Germany invaded Poland in September of 1939, Congress passed the Neutrality Act of 1939. And this was sort of a cash and carry agreement that allowed us to sell military goods, arms, and ammunition to Britain and France, but those countries had to transport those items on their own ships. The Neutrality Act of 1939, allowing this sort of cash and carry policy, was our first step away from isolationism and neutrality. We were moving into interventionism. When France fell to the Germans, by 1940, the British Commonwealth and the remaining British Empire were the only forces fighting against Germany and Italy. And Britain had been paying for our provisions and equipment with gold. But by 1941, Britain's cash finances were becoming depleted, and they asked us not to force them to sell off British assets. So here's a quote from Wikipedia. The British Expeditionary Force lost 68,000 soldiers during the French campaign, and following the Dunkirk evacuation in 1940, abandoned much of its military hardware. On December 7, 1940, Winston Churchill pressed President Roosevelt in a 15-page letter for American help, unquote. Now, Roosevelt, of course, wanted to help, but he was hampered because our public opinion was against war and we had the Neutrality Acts in place. And these Neutrality Acts did not allow us to sell armaments or supplies on credit or for us to lend money to warring nations. So Roosevelt came up with an idea to circumvent both our national isolationism and leanings of neutrality and our Neutrality Acts. He proposed the Lend-Lease Act. And again from Wikipedia, quote, as one Roosevelt biographer has characterized it, if there was no practical alternative, there was certainly no moral one either. Britain and the Commonwealth were carrying the battle for all civilization, and the overwhelming majority of Americans, led in the late election by their president, wished to help them. As the president himself put it, there can be no reasoning with incendiary bombs, unquote. Now, getting Lend-Lease passed was not an easy feat, and it took a lot of convincing of the public. By then, more news and photographs of the devastation being done in Europe were reaching the United States, and that did help change the attitude of citizens and politicians here. President Roosevelt signed the Lend-Lease Bill into law, as I said, March 11, 1941. It permitted him to, quote, sell, transfer title to, exchange, lease, lend, or otherwise dispose of to any such government whose defense the president deems vital to the defense of the United States, any defense article, unquote. So in April 1941, this policy was extended to China, and in October 1941 to the Soviet Union. Roosevelt then approved $1 billion in lend-lease aid to Britain at the end of October 1941. And this followed the 1940, which was a year before, the 1940 Destroyers for Bases Agreement. That agreement involved 50 U.S. naval destroyers being transferred to the Royal Navy and the Royal Canadian Navy in exchange for rights to use naval bases in the Caribbean. Churchill also granted the United States base rights in Bermuda and Newfoundland free, allowing the British military assets to be redeployed. Now, after the attack on Pearl Harbor and the United States entering the war in December 1941, United States sentiments changed, and there was very little demand to cut Lend-Lease spending. So in the spring of 1944, the House passed a bill to renew the Lend-Lease program by a vote of 334 to 21, and the Senate passed it by a vote of 63 to 1. In addition to all of this, in February 1942, the U.S. and Britain signed the Anglo-American Mutual Aid Agreement. And with this, the Allies could provide each other with goods, services, and mutual aid without charging commercial payments. Now, Roosevelt was eager to have public consent for the mutual aid agreement, but the plan was controversial. Quote, Roosevelt explained to the public and press that his plan was comparable to one neighbor lending another a garden hose to put out a fire in his home. What do I do in such a crisis? The president asked at a press conference. I don't say, neighbor, my garden hose cost me $15. You have to pay me $15 for it. I don't want $15. I want my garden hose back after the fire is over. To which Senator Robert Taft, a Republican, and if you didn't know, Roosevelt was a Democrat. So Robert Taft, a Republican from Ohio, responded, lending war equipment is a good deal like lending chewing gum. You certainly don't want the same gum back. Unquote. In practice, very little equipment was ever returned except for a few unarmed transport ships. Surplus material equipment is of no value in peacetime. From history.com, I learned, quote, the Lend-Lease agreements with 30 countries provided for repayment not in terms of money or returned goods, but in joint action directed towards the creation of a liberalized international economic order in the post-war world, sorry. That is, the U.S. would be repaid when the recipient fought the common enemy and joined the world trade and diplomatic agencies such as the United Nations, unquote. And again, taking this material from the history.com website, when Roosevelt pushed the Lend-Lease Agreement, he was not motivated primarily by altruism or generosity. He intended for the arrangement to serve the interest of the United States by helping defeat Nazi Germany without the United States having to enter the war outright in the beginning. Now, our nation was not prepared militarily or emotionally to get involved in another war, but I suspect Roosevelt knew that given time, and he was buying time, public opinion would change and the United States would enter the war if our freedoms were challenged. So I'll leave this discussion with a few thoughts. Actually, I'll leave it now and give you those few thoughts right around the corner because we're going to commercial break.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep,
Every night they say he sings the herd to sleep.
In a bass voice rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings raggedy music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in his saddle on a horse. That is syncopated gaiter, there is such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fellas come, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin', rootin', tootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe.
You can now find the legendary KFAR on the FM dial at 97.5.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Rich Dennison. President Biden this afternoon signing the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package.
Well, this historic legislation is about rebuilding the backbone of this country and giving people in this nation, working people, middle-class folks, people who built the country, a fighting chance.
Republicans have criticized the measure, saying it includes unnecessary spending not directly related to the fight against COVID-19. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention today issuing a statement on the one-year mark since COVID-19 was declared a global pandemic and remembering the more than half million American lives lost.
That were tired and impatient, and still through it all, determined, and that thanks to coronavirus vaccines developed in record time, that this pandemic will end.
Fox's Jeff Bonasso. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Organizers say a veteran Iditarod musher was removed from the race on Wednesday after he tested positive for the coronavirus. The organizers say Gunnar Johnson of Duluth, Minnesota, was withdrawn from the event at the McGrath checkpoint. Johnson was tested by a COVID-19 team member and the rapid test came back positive. He was then retested twice using a molecular-based COVID-19 test and both results came back positive. Johnson, who is asymptomatic, was notified of his positive test immediately and removed from his checkpoint for isolation. He will be transported from the trail. And finally, two Chivac men remain missing days after a fire devoured the former school building in the Southwest Alaska community, subsequently causing power outages and leaving many homes without water or sewer. In the early hours of Monday morning, flames began pouring out of the abandoned school building, Alaska State Troopers said in a statement. The community of just over 1,000 people does not have a fire department, and the building was a total loss. Dennis Slats had left Sunday evening with one of his brothers and headed toward the store on an ATV. He hopped off near the school, which was the last time he was seen. His boyfriend, James Tickian, was unaccounted for as well. The cause of the fire is under investigation.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us, because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
When you love to fish, you don't let a little bit of ice get in your way. Show your love. Enter the Frontier Outfitters Ice Fishing Photo Contest. You could win a $50 gift card every Friday. All you have to do is upload your favorite ice fishing photo to their Facebook page. Visit Frontier Outfitters for everything you need, from rods and tackle to augers and the right winter clothes. Enter Frontier Outfitters Ice Fishing Photo Contest now through April 16th. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK to let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. And I hope all of you enjoyed the Cowboy Joe music. That brings back good memories of all the years I listened to the show. I hope that brings back good memories for you when Joe was here talking to you. Now, right before the commercial break, I was about to wrap up my discussion on Lend-Lease. The Lend-Lease allowed the United States to succeed in becoming what was called the arsenal of democracy during World War II. By supporting our allies, we were able to secure an important rank in the international economic and political order when the war drew to a close. And in case anyone is wondering, there are plenty of websites where you can read the staggering amount of equipment and supplies that were sent to our allies during World War II. And here's a breakdown of goods we sent as of 1944. About 54% of our aid consisted of fighting equipment, naval, and merchant ships. About 21% comprised industrial materials and products, which included aviation, gasoline, metals, machine tools for the manufacture of ammunition. Also included here was cloth and leather to make uniforms and shoes, as well as medical supplies, lumber, and a whole list of more things. About 13% of aid consisted of food and agricultural products for workers of allied countries and their soldiers. The rest, 12%, was given for what's termed vital war services. And that was construction of factories in our own country to produce the lend-lease goods, as well as repair of ships, ferrying of aircraft, and building air and naval bases. And I would say, even though we did not send troops to enter World War II early, we had an extensive hand in shaping the outcome for our allies working to secure freedom. And though this discussion isn't directly about specific firearms, I'm relatively sure that without our Lend-Lease program to help our allies in World War II, we might not have the freedoms we have today to own firearms at all. Now, I want to finish up our discussion from last week from Guy Smith's book, Guns and Control. Actually, we've been working on this for a few weeks now. We were about two-thirds of the way through the chapter on gun availability, and we're going to wrap that up today. Does the availability of guns have any connection at all to do with crimes committed with guns? And we learned it does not. There's no correlation whatsoever with the availability of guns on the legal market or guns as we law-abiding citizens own to the number of gun crimes committed. If you missed the last 2 weeks of Shooter's Corner where we've been discussing this, you can listen at the archives that Melissa updated for us. Now, last week, I'm just going to go through some points quickly to reiterate. Last week, we learned, first, violent crime in the United States is 23% higher in the top 20% of cities ranked by population than in the bottom 20%. Two, this has to do with what Smith terms population convivence. Remember, that term is used to describe large metro areas where people live closely together. Number three, the reason violent crimes are higher in large metro areas is because crime is driven by street gangs. Four, we learned where street gang members get their guns, and it isn't buying them legally through an FFL. The millions of guns available to the millions of law-abiding citizens to buy, that's us, has little effect on violent crime, especially gun crime or gang crime. And that's because gang member criminals obtain their guns on the underground or black market. The underground market for guns is not all that large. Reality is that a criminal obtains a gun and either uses it in multiple crimes or uses it in one crime, then sells it back into the underground market where multiple other criminals obtain it and commit their crimes. So if we use Smith's statistics and John Lott's and Gary Kleck's, we find that limiting our access to gun purchases will not affect the bad guy obtaining a gun for criminal purposes. Number six, and just how do guns get into the underground market? We learned it takes on average 112 months, that's about 9.3 years, for a legally purchased gun to wind up on the black market. And how does this happen? It doesn't happen to all that many guns. These methods by which guns end up underground for criminal access is acquaintance transfers, good family and friends of a criminal, straw man purchases, and outright theft. Remember, the criminal is the multiplier. Many criminals use one gun that cycles through the black market multiple times, or one criminal uses a black market gun multiple times for multiple crimes. That makes it look to the public like gun availability is a problem, but it's not. The problem is the number of criminals and gang members we have on the streets that are not being dealt with. Number seven, in my mind, there is one last statistical issue we should think about after last week's discussion on Smith's gun availability chapter. That is, When we restrict gun sales, we drive more crime guns and access to crime guns underground. When we instituted the NICS system, the National Instant Background Check System, about 3% of criminal acquisitions stopped being made through traceable FFL sources and were driven to underground markets. And the criminals of violent crime won't go away if legal access to gun purchases is even more restricted. So let's move on to new material and finish up this chapter. Smith talks about the subject of gun runners within the United States. He says some politicians who are anti-gun tell us that gun runners buy guns in states where laws for gun purchases are not strict, and then they take those guns and sell them in stricter states. And Smith says the data shows otherwise. He writes that the BATF reports annually on what guns are traced and for what crimes they were confiscated. Now, Smith is talking about here at first international trafficking. Their 2017 report notes, quote, only 0.6%, that's very small, 0.6% of traced guns were recovered in weapons trafficking offenses. In fact, weapons trafficking is 19th on the list of crimes from which guns were recovered, far below the number one reason, which is prohibited persons being in possession of a weapon, which occurs 42 times more often, unquote. That was from Smith's book. Now, this is just people that were caught, that 0.6%. But still, it's just a tiny percentage of criminal gun movement that comes from international trafficking. So if crime guns are not coming from international trafficking, how are they being moved from state to state? In what states are the eventual source of guns for criminals on the underground markets first legally purchased? And what states are the destination states where they're later purchased on the underground market? Now, according to Smith, the BATF does keep statistics on where the guns found to be used in crime were originally legally purchased or retailed from. And he says, quote, on average, across all states, 65% of crime guns were originally retailed in the same state from which they were recovered, and most of the rest came from immediately neighboring states, unquote. Now, Smith explains it is the, quote, transported to neighboring states, unquote, or, quote, adjacent states, unquote, terminology that distorts the statistics about where the firearms are used in crimes came to be in those adjacent states. He says each year about 11% of Americans move. And he also says that statistics show of those 11%, 40% of those move more than 100 miles away. So copying Smith's math here, quote, based on the current U.S. population and the pollster estimates of a 40% household gun ownership rate, this divides out to about 5,755,000 people in gun-owning households that relocate a fair distance away, but most relocate either in the same state or neighboring states. Thus, a gun legally purchased in state X has a high probability of legally being relocated to state Y, and most of the time when it crosses state lines, it is to the next state over, unquote. So it isn't gun runners moving guns from states to states for resale in the underground market. It's we citizens moving from place to place who find that after 112 months or 9.3 years or so, are guns stolen, sold to the wrong people, or otherwise entering that black market. And one other tidbit fits here. Smith's online gun facts project used BATF data from 2013 to check the tos and froms of all these guns moving from states to states. And his project benchmarked each state using, quote, a gun control wish list published by the Brady Campaign to Stop Gun Violence, which is now the Brady Plan. We were testing if the allegedly strict state laws favored by gun control groups had any bearing on the interstate transportation of guns. Much to our surprise, states with very strict gun control laws imported most of their crime guns from other states with strict laws, not from states with lax gun control laws, unquote. And I'll finish this up right after the commercial.
Thank you.
life of your car or truck. Keep it in top shape with Rogers Auto Repair. Rogers is a complete auto shop. They do it all. Tune-ups to winterizing. Even engine and transmission rebuilds right on the premises. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. They've been helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Call family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair and be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
Hello, Fairbanks. It's John from the Westmark Hotel and Conference Center again. Easter is my favorite day of the year. Westmark has Easter options for you. You want to dine in our Northern Latitudes dining room? You've got it. Call 459-7739 and make your brunch reservations today. You want to spend a day at home, but you want someone else to cook for you? Curbside pickup is for you. Enjoy a smoked salmon cake appetizer, followed by slow roasted pot roast with root vegetables and mashed potatoes. Finish the meal off with our house-made strawberry cake. Curbside and dine-in is $35.99 inclusive per person. Call 459-7739. Make your reservations by March 25th and you'll be entered into a drawing to win the Easter gift basket. Come see the Easter Bunny and celebrate with us. Just a reminder that the Westmark is also open for special events. So if you need catering space, call me and I'd love to show you around. That's 459-7739. I hope to see you soon at the Westmark Hotel and Conference Center.
Getting out to play in Alaska is a year-round activity. So before you leave home, make sure your trailer is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to wiring and lights. Have it serviced at Arctic RV. Motorhomes, toy haulers, campers, bodywork to appliances. See their huge selection of RV parts as well. Alaska plays rough. Make sure you and your RV are ready for it with Arctic RV. Book your appointment now. Rough it in style. Arctic RV. Open all winter long at 30th and Pegger.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with daytime highs approaching 10. Winds out of the west 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 17 below. Tonight, cloudy skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 3 below. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 5 degrees below zero.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. And before I finish up here, just one last plug for Glenn's class, because I'd like to see this filled. Friday from 6 to 9 and Saturday from 9 to 5. It probably won't run all the way till 5. This weekend, there's one spot open. If you can take that class, call Glenn at 907-347-1396. I think having Glenn teaching a reloading class in Fairbanks is very important, and I want to see these classes filled so that we can continue to do this. Now, I had just talked about moving, how guns, when they move from state to state, they're most likely, Smith tells us, they're most likely moving from the more strict gun control states to other more strict gun control states, not from liberal states to stricter states. And Smith puts this in context in that, for the most part, states with stricter gun laws fall within the same region. And since we citizens tend to move under 100 miles when we do move, our new destination is most likely a state with similar strict gun laws. And one of his examples is the close proximity of Connecticut, New Jersey, Maryland, New York, and Massachusetts. So if someone legally buys a gun in one of these stricter states and moves, it's likely the gun will again end up in one of the stricter neighboring states. And if you're wondering how guns end up in the underground market, we talked about this earlier. It's by theft, known illegal transfers, unintended illegal transfers, and mass burglary of gun stores. So here's some Smith humor. Quote, Enterprising criminals have discovered that driving a truck through the front window of a gun store late at night is a fast way to get a lot of guns and in turn make a buck selling them into the underground, unquote. And here's a sobering thought in the rest of that quote. Quote, nearly 9,000 guns were either stolen from or lost by federal firearms licensees in 2018. 9,000 guns. Now, I wonder what the rate of gun thefts from our local gun stores is. And now we know there is no great state-to-state gun trafficking conspiracy. This is just something politicians who want to limit our access to guns have made up. And now that we know that, Smith tells us, quote, the sobering summary is that most gun crimes occur at street level, and so does most crime gun acquisition, unquote. And that said, Smith reminds us that street crime isn't the only type of crime, so street crime is not the only place guns are misused. He explores other sources of gun crime to see if the general availability of guns is a problem with other than street crimes. And one of the places he looks at that I thought was interesting was intimate partner violence, where one partner assaults another. And the reason to explore this is because it is a gun crime that normally happens at home, not on the street. And Smith reminds us that in the polls, 40% of American households have a gun. And remember, his statistics are from 2017 or 2018 at the latest. And he says, quote, if having a gun in the house was either a catalyst for violence or merely a convenient tool of such, then guns would figure into a lot of domestic injuries and deaths, unquote. And he reminds us that the word convenience is critical in this aspect. Think about it. In these intimate altercations, if a gun wasn't available, would the bad intimate partner use other means to an end, strangling, beating, using a knife, or something else? Smith calls this a mixed perspective about using guns in domestic violence. And here is where misuse of statistics comes in. Quote from Smith. Government crime reporting does not allow us to filter all the aspects of domestic violence. For example, the Bureau of Justice Statistics report on homicides between intimate partners, we have little clarity on whether the people were cohabitating, unquote. What he's telling us is that without clarity whether the victim and the assailant were cohabitating, by just recording the homicide with the Bureau of Justice Statistics, were the pair of people actually ex-spouses having an altercation in a home? Married, or maybe they're having an altercation outside a home, like being confronted in a workplace situation? Or were these two people, were they married or not, in a house at the time where the firearm was present? And the reason Smith says we need to know this is because we need to know if the gun was already in the house where two people were arguing, or if one party brought the gun to kill the other. In the latter situation, that means that the gun crime was premeditated, not a spontaneous argument between two intimate people. And why do we need to know this? Because those who are against guns tell us that guns in a home, quote, instigates or facilitates violence, unquote. So with all the domestic violence numbers thrown in the same category at the Bureau of Justice Statistics, those people telling us that guns in homes facilitate murder between intimates cannot prove that with statistics. Smith writes, quote, using the most recent BJS report on non-fatal domestic violence and the approximately 980,000 physical attacks between intimate partners, domiciled and otherwise, we see that gunplay enters into the picture only a small portion of the time, unquote. However, we're told out of nearly 1,500 homicides between husband and wife, Smith narrowed this to likely cohabitating couples, firearms do dominate the choice for committing matricide or uxoricide. And you all know I'm not all that smart, and I had to look up uxoricide. And we know that matricide is when a wife kills her husband, but I didn't know what uxoricide was. So our second smartest person in the room lesson for today is that uxoricide is when a man kills his wife Exor is Latin for wife, and side is means killer in Latin. So even though we don't know from the Bureau of Justice Statistics the exact relationship between two intimate parties, Smith has broken down what we can know from statistics. From a chart in his book of the 979,660 physical assaults between intimates, only 461 were actual gun homicides between husband and wife. And my takeaway is that the wide availability of guns in general and the household ownership of guns does not play a large role in intimate homicides, at least as large as politicians would have us believe. And moving on, Smith points out that if the general availability of guns led to crime, we would find, quote, solid covariance between the number of firearms and crime. When the gun supply goes up in a state or county, the general crime level rises, unquote. But Smith says that is not true. The correlation does not exist. And he gives statistics to back this up in his book. Then Smith asks if there is any social benefit with the increased availability of guns. And we just learned in his chapter that the increased availability of guns is not responsible for increases in violent crime. We already found out when we discussed public carry weeks ago that the increase in number of people able to carry guns for protection or have guns for protection in their home cannot statistically be proven to lower crime. Remember back in the 1980s through the 1990s when crime was rising, the states began expanding their shall issue permit statutes and constitutional carry statutes. Those put more guns in the hands of people for legal personal protection. But simultaneously, states were passing more laws like the three strikes laws to decrease crime, which had risen to really never before seen levels. And those laws were partially responsible for lowering crime. So we can't know exactly if it was more permitting or for personal protection or stricter treatment of criminals that ultimately lowered crime. What we do know is during that time of increased permitting, the crime rate did go down. And what we also know is that with more guns in the hands of people to protect themselves, the crime rate certainly did not go up. More availability of guns did not increase the crime rate. So let me see if in 2 minutes I can wrap this up. It brings us to the end of Guy Smith's chapter on guns availability in his book, Guns and Control. And I know some of my friends and co-instructors have purchased this book since we've been discussing it. And I want to end with a long quote from Smith, which sums up his chapter. He entitles this list, I'm going to read you, The Spin. Quote, misuse of guns is not a factor of availability. It is a factor of intent, which is influenced by culture and subculture. People making an availability claim have not looked below the surface. Number two, violent crime is committed everywhere, but homicides are not. Gun play in order to kill is confined to subsets of the population and concentrated in larger cities. It is not a generalized problem. Number three, where guns are acquired for criminal use is very important, but some policy groups do not discuss this. Number four, there is no iron pipeline. The BATF trace data shows that most crime guns are recovered from the same state where they were originally sold, and most of the rest come from neighboring states, likely through legal migration. And five, guns are misused nearly everywhere in one way or another. You may live in a county with no homicides, but that doesn't mean there were not armed robberies and threats from hotheads, unquote. And I might come back to Smith's book sometime in the future. But next week, let's move on to more subjects about personal protection and specific guns. Now, let's close here commemorating this to Joe because we were lucky enough to hear his theme song. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And I will see all of you or talk to all of you next week.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.